In every partnership, facing challenges together requires empathy and a lot of open communication. In this episode, Hadley's Mark Arneson is joined by Dr. Ann Wagner and Eric Ringham to discuss vision loss and its impact on marriage. I'm Ricky Anger, and this is Hadley Presents.
So, Ann and Eric, thank you so much for joining us on Hadley Presents today. It's great to have you both here.
Good to be here. Thank you.
I'm so happy to be here.
So, Ann, you've been on the show before. And when we did an episode, it was called Emotions, Mental Health, and Vision Loss. So, thanks for coming back. And for those folks that haven't had a chance to listen to that episode, do you mind just sharing a little bit about yourself?
Yes. Yeah, my name is Ann Wagner. I am a board-certified clinical psychologist. I'm newly retired, but still active consulting and doing kind of presentations on the topics of vision loss and mental health. And I'm legally blind due to retinitis pigmentosa. And my mom had RP, had five children, and four of us inherited the RP.
Thanks again for joining us again, Anne. We really appreciate it. And it looks like you've brought a friend along as well this time. So, Eric, thanks for jumping on, and it's great to meet you. Do you mind just sharing a little bit about yourself, Eric?
Sure. My name is Eric Ringham. I'm a semi-retired journalist and actor. I'm a writer and editor. I worked for about 40 years for the big newspaper here in town, the Star Tribune. And then also for Minnesota Public Radio for the last 10 years of my career. And Anne and I have been married for going on 10 years now.
So I'm really excited about our conversation today. You know, it's not often that we get to hear from both sides of the marriage, you know, the husband and the wife, about the impact that vision loss has on that relationship. But before we get there, Anne, you've mentioned this in some of the conversations we have, this concept of dilemmas. Do you mind sharing about what you mean when you talk about the idea of dilemmas, or perhaps how you kind of define what a dilemma is?
Yeah, I define a dilemma as a moment where the context of the situation we're in can call for or pull us to act on different values, and there's no win-win. If we act on one, there's no way to act on the others. And so it's an internal dilemma where we already know in that moment or shortly after, we're going to have emotions show up that tell us what we care about for the ones we couldn't act on. And we get to validate it's because we care about something. And yet we made a choice that was valued. And so I try to encourage all the people I worked with to never judge our younger selves for the choices they make, because we face dilemmas almost every day, where we have a choice, because we can only do one thing at a time in this one moment. It's the only thing we have any control over, is what we choose to do in this one moment right now. And there's these dilemmas where we can only act on one value at a time. Sometimes we're lucky and there's a win-win. We can take one action and it covers the main important values, but that isn't always the case.
Okay, so if I'm getting this right, dilemmas, they call us or pull us to act on two different values.
Yeah.
So has this come up in your marriage, Eric, Anne, has this come up in your marriage on occasion?
Yes. And often it is related to the blindness, and sometimes it's not. So yeah, we have a lot of dilemmas, and two main kinds. One is when Eric offers help that I haven't asked for, and the other is when he's busy and I need his help for something I can't see to do.
Yeah.
So he's busy. And so if I lay out first what the values are that come into play, when he's offering me help that I haven't asked for, the dilemma there for me, the different values are, one, if I accept the help, it would mean because I value and I know his core is all about loving me and wanting to be helpful and of service. And I would be supporting him in that if I accepted the help. But the other pull for me is to decline the help, because I also, my own core value of self-sufficiency and independence, it's part of my integrity to do the things that I'm able to do myself. And so if I decline the help, that would be the value I'd be acting on. So there's a dilemma there. I can't really do both. And for him, I'm going to let him share.
Yeah, I'd love to hear from Eric.
Well, in that example about offering help that hasn't been asked for, Anne is right. I was raised that if you see someone who looks like they could use a hand, you offer that hand. my father was a Lutheran pastor, and the ethic of, you know, doing good in the world, of helping people out, lending people a helping hand, it was theoretically part of the foundation of our household. And, you know, for me, where I come from, if you see someone needing help and you don't offer to help them, it's a kind of an insult. And it's something that I just wouldn't do naturally.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. I'm trained. I was brought up in the case we're probably going to wind up talking about here. If Anne should happen to say, "Oh God, I'm really thirsty," mm-hmm. it is in my nature to jump up and go get her a glass of water.
Sure.
So the value there is for you is of being of service, being kind, loving me. Those would be the values internal for you.
And I have come to understand that Anne would really rather get her own water or exercise her option of asking me to get her a glass of water, but she would rather not have me go get her one without being asked.
Gotcha.
And I am not capable of not giving her a glass of water under my own power if I see that she would benefit from having that glass of water. So
I just think it might help listeners to understand. So we understand the one value that's right. showing up for you, being of help, and right. and all the nuances of just that, of being of help
sure.
to somebody you care about, is a view of, if I don't, I'm potentially doing something offensive.
Right.
But it's cool who you are. But the other value, if you don't offer the help until you wait for me to ask you, that value would be, what would you call the value if you withheld?
That value is called help by not helping.
Yes. So that's the name we came up with when he helped, truly helping me by not helping.
Right. But even just your personal preferences, it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with you being blind. You might be perfectly well-sighted or able to see better than me and still want me to not be always in your face with glasses sure. of water.
Sure.
Yeah.
And in our early dating, there was a time where I was sitting on the couch and I just happened to speak the truth. You know, I'm thirsty and I was about to get up to get myself a glass of water, and he jumped up immediately. And so then that became a perfect word for, if you say you're thirsty, so this is when he has already offered help that I didn't ask for.
Yeah.
We can both use that word. If you say you're thirsty and I get to validate immediately, this is who he is. He is built to be yeah. loving, and I'm not judging that he offered help I didn't ask for. And then he will respond with help by not helping. And he understands that yeah. he's supporting my value of self-sufficiency and independence.
But there is kind of a bottom line beyond which I won't willingly go. You know, if you have a cut, I'm going for the first aid kit. And if I see that you're thirsty, I'm going to get you a glass of water. And the label that we've come up with is, if you say you're thirsty, I'm going to get you a glass of water. But there is this other whole universe of things that's covered by helping by not helping.
Help me understand that better, Eric. A whole universe of things.
Well, that's just the basic rule. If I'm restraining my impulse to help, that is helping. That is actively helping. And it's something that I have to work at every day.
He shared with me that each choice we make, we're going to have emotions about the choice we didn't make. And those emotions also are so important to validate and understand. Like he says, it takes energy for him to decide to take the kind of the choice to not offer the help when he thinks he could be of service. And he'll often say, just so you know,
oh, yeah.
I'm helping by not helping.
You know, it's the thought that counts, right?
And what I assure yeah. him is it allows me to validate his core in that moment, because he is the love of my life. He is my partner. And I know that it's hard for him to support me in this way. And yet I get to see that he is. And it's not about taking credit. It's just about me being able to validate something he's experiencing internally that is hard. And that's the whole point of belongingness and connectedness and just deepening our connection and understanding of each other. Right. So those are two names, that if you say you're thirsty and help by not helping.
Just listening to you guys kind of share about this, it sounds like you've spent a lot of time talking about it and figuring it out. But I'm kind of curious about that. You guys have taken the time and the effort to kind of pay attention to this and come up with a solution for this. And can you tell me a little bit about how that conversation started and maybe how it evolved a little bit?
It started with me sharing with Eric when we were dating this idea of externalizing naming the patterns, and that the more we can understand the values at play, those inner pushes and pulls, and then the core values of what it is we're wanting to show up that matters to us. Once you understand the values, it's so much easier to just validate that. So it started with me sharing the principle, and people where I've presented at other vision loss conferences will come up afterwards and say they love the idea of being able to talk with their partner or significant other or even coworkers for common dilemmas that show up. And the idea of having fun with the naming, because we like to laugh and humor helps us a lot in navigating these.
Okay, so there was another dilemma that you guys talked about, and when he's busy.
When Eric's busy, he's in the middle of something, and I may or may not know that he's actually in the middle of something really important, because I just don't always know. And I need him to help with something where my computer. So I'll ask him, and the dilemma there is, for me and the values, is I either ask him for help or I don't. If I ask him for help, it means I'm valuing the task I'm trying to get completed and it's important to me. So that's one value. Or if I don't ask him, say I actually know he's busy, then I'm certainly honoring the value of that I love him. And I totally believe that his wants and needs for his day are just as important as mine. Just because I'm blind does not give me a priority in any way. So I would be supporting him to not bother him when he's busy. And then for him, the one who's busy at the time I ask, the two options are
to help
just wait. There's a cute story. So there's this day many years ago where we were having some pie, leftover pie. And we're sitting there and I finished my pie. I thought he was done with his because I couldn't see. And I asked him to look something up on his iPad, which was there. And he had a mouthful of pie and he's like, "Can I eat my pie?" And it cracked us up. I was laughing so hard. And I'm like, "I didn't know you weren't done with your pie." And then we just realized that's a perfect name for when he's busy with something and I've asked him to do something. And we use it at least once a week. "Can I eat my pie?" he'll say, and I know he's busy and I totally validate, like, yeah, I can wait.
I love that. "Can I eat my pie?" And you guys both immediately know then this is the dilemma that you're dealing with.
Yep. And there's another name that I think it happened when we were in a grocery store. Yeah. Do you want to tell
Target? Yeah. Anne has many superpowers, but one of them is that she's more spatially aware, more geographically aware of her position relative to other objects. And she learns the layout, say, for example, of the grocery section in our Target. So when we're going through a Target store and we're looking for stuff, she'll give me the next three things and she'll say, "No, we've got to go get X now." And so we'll be heading in that direction. And then she'll say, she'll remember something else that's in that neighborhood and she'll name that one. And then, so I've got two items in my head that I'm trying to keep straight that we're looking for. And I'm navigating the other things, like I'm leading Anne through the grocery store and I'm pushing a cart and I've got this list, this mental list that I'm trying to pursue. And Anne will name two more things after the two that I've got in my head. And I get to a point where I have to say, "Hey, you're crashing my computer because there are too many tasks piled up on top of each other. And I've lost my ability to keep them straight and to do them in an orderly way."
So the name "You're crashing my computer" comes up not as frequently as the "Can I eat my pie?" which just, you know, the pie is just letting me know he's busy and I can eat, I can wait. Unless it's something urgent, I can wait, because his needs and wants for the day and his time matter, and they matter to me. The "You're crashing my computer" is usually when I'm saying too many things or to do things, speaking them out loud, because it helps me remember and it just helps me know he needs space and time and I just need to not speak them for a bit. So those are some common things that come up for us. And I know other couples or relationships may have different kinds of dilemmas, but I we do find the naming helps us validate each other, stay connected, actually enhance our sense of connection and belongingness with each other because we understand the values.
I love that. You guys both know exactly what is going on the minute you use those phrases. So I want to shift the conversation a little bit. part of what I get to do here at Hadley is talk to folks, and I hear their stories and I hear their challenges. And I also talk to spouses of folks who are dealing with vision loss. And I've heard sometimes, husbands and wives share, they sometimes feel sad or grief for their spouse's vision loss, but they can feel guilty for feeling those, you know, emotions of sadness or feeling grief for that vision loss because it hasn't happened to them. Are you guys able to talk a little bit about that, Eric? Or are you able to share a little bit about that at all?
My father went blind later in his life. He had a severe case of macular degeneration. He was really burdened by his blindness, and it really got in the way of things that he wanted to do. And I think I came out of that relationship with a sense of kind of guilt that he's going through this, and I can't, try as I might, I can't really relate to it. The thing about that was that it made me feel like there's really not, I can't really do enough for him. I mean, I was always offering to do things for him that were off the mark. I'd call him up and I'd say, "Hey, Dad, I've got some free time this afternoon. You want to go have lunch?" And he'd say, "No." And it would be him avoiding it because it was easier for him to just stay home alone and, you know, do his own private things. So, you know, I felt sort of something like guilt at my ineptitude with him. With Anne, I think grief is the better word.
Okay.
And I do feel grief on a couple of levels with her because it's hard to watch someone you love going through this progressive vision loss. Anne had precious little vision when I met her, but she's lost most of that, I'd wager, in the years since then. And to see the things that she can't any longer see or appreciate are hard for me. I keep trying to deny the reality of it. This happened just, a couple of weeks ago. We had one of those extraordinary full moons, and we were driving, and the moon was hanging over the end of the road like a blimp. I mean, it was just huge completely full to bursting, brightly lit up, and this kind of delightful orange tint to it as it hung there over the horizon. Once again, I tried to get her to see it. I'd say, no, just look, it's just straight ahead. It's about 11 o'clock at our position, just above the level of the road. Do you remember that, Anne?
I do.
And you said, I can see a light.
But I couldn't appreciate any of the orange, and I couldn't make out the circle of it, but I didn't know if I was looking at a bright street lamp or the actual moon. But I saw a light. There's been other times I haven't been able to find it at all with my scanning because I have such severe tunnel vision. I just can't find it, and I get a headache. So
I think I have a thing in my personality, probably going back to my childhood, that I need to validate that I've seen something incredibly cool by having someone else see that incredibly cool thing. And if they don't stamp my souvenir card that way, I feel like I can't really prove that I saw it.
From my psychodynamic background, I would just want to say what that's actually about, or my understanding of what that's about, is because we are born as social creatures, it is incredibly important to us to feel understood. It's why we share stories. We are meaning makers, and it's all through the stories of our lives and wanting to feel like somebody else has heard that story or even shared in it. It deepens our belongingness and our connectedness, and that is healthy, and it's something we actually need for optimal health and well-being. So it's not necessarily that you're wanting your card stamped. I think it's just that it's part of when you see something really cool, you want somebody else to experience so you can feel that shared meaning. And it's about belongingness. And that is, we've talked about, that is an area of grief for you, that I cannot see what you see. And there's nothing, the helplessness that shows up is telling you that truth. There's nothing you can do to have me see it. And what are the values? What does the grief tell you about what you care about?
Well, it tells me that I love you and I want you to experience the same world that I experience and all its beauty.
Those are ideas, and we get attached to ideas, and grief is about acknowledging some ideas are not possible and we have to detach, and that's grief.
Yeah.
So, but if we get to the value level, you said it, you stand for loving me. So what are, when you connect to that level, there are many, many other ways you can show that love through describing, through, right.
Right. And I like to think that I'm capable, that I have the verbal skills to help Anne appreciate things that she can't see. I can never learn to just keep it to myself. If an eagle flies over, and it happens almost every day, I'll see it and I'll say, ah, there goes an eagle. It's flying right over the car.
Yeah. And I feel his joy and delight in that moment. And I know it's kind of quickly be followed, because we've talked about it, that this grief will show up and it tells him what he stands for. He loves me and he wants belongingness. And luckily we are able to find many, many, many other ways to have that. And this isn't about not feeling the grief. It's not about conquering it, preventing it from showing up. Walking our journey together is about understanding that every day the grief of not having those moments of connectedness the way he might most want, the blindness is interfering. It's creating this grief, and yet we can validate it and have compassion for it and still feel close.
Those are wonderful stories, you guys. I am curious, is there anything that you would say to somebody who feels like they don't, or they may not have permission to experience or feel loss for their spouse's vision loss? Is there anything you'd want to say to somebody who maybe doesn't feel like they have permission to experience or feel that loss?
Well, I would just want to validate, if you're feeling it, it's real and it's trying to tell you what you care about. And it's really, really important to validate our own reality, because our core knows our truth. And we do have permission to experience it, to talk with it, our own inner experiences. We can talk with the grief and understand it. And I would encourage people to talk with the other person in their life, you know, the person with the vision loss.
and that's important to me, because when people describe me as a caregiver, I think, you know, it is absolutely no different from any other relationship, any other marriage. I think, you know, each partner brings certain skills and lacks certain skills. And Anne is good at showing up with psychological expertise and showing people loving kindness and warmth and support. And I'm good at reading soup labels and driving cars. It doesn't mean that I'm caregiving when I do the part that I'm good at.
Yeah. So it's clear that you guys have a lot of fun together too, just from your stories. Can you guys share a time where maybe you can look back on it and chuckle now, or laugh at an experience that maybe you had together, maybe because of your vision loss, Anne?
Yeah, there are so many, and they happen, you know, almost every day. Something will happen that will have a smile or chuckle that's actually been created by the blindness. So we both appreciate it, what the blindness brings. It isn't always stress or grief. But they might not be funny to other people, and they're hard to remember. I was thinking about, he'll pull out the car from the garage, and I think I'm feeling the front door. And I've opened the back door, and suddenly I'll hear his voice. And he's like, well, okay, if you want to feel like you're being chauffeured, and like I'm going to get in the back seat. And he's got this wry humor that cracks me up. And suddenly his voice is coming from a direction slightly different than what I was expecting. And it's that kind of thing that just happens. There's other like funny things. I don't know what it is about. When I drop something and I'm feeling for it, Eric will just start laughing. And he's like, once again, it's like you have anti-radar. Because I listened to where it fell, and you'd think I'd get good at locating it, but I'm moving around. I think I'm doing it in a grid pattern, and I miss it. He says, it's unerring. You're like a millimeter from it, and your hand moves away to search another area. Yeah. So that happens frequently.
It's amazing how her hand will describe the outline of the thing she's looking for.
And I miss it.
But she won't find it.
Yeah. And then he'll say, to the right, go to the right more, you know.
How important is it for you guys to kind of recognize these moments and look back on these moments and incorporate them into your marriage?
On a scale of 1 to 10, about 11 or 12. We take great pride in being able to embrace the sheer physical comedy that we sometimes get involved in. And I think it's a big part of our identity. You know, there are these new therapies coming out all the time, gene therapies and things that can restore partial sight if other conditions are right. And so it becomes an actual possibility. Is this something you'd want to think about? And Anne has had to think a little bit about what it would be like for her to submit to that kind of therapy. And I've had to think a little bit about what it would be like if Anne could suddenly get a good look at me. I don't know if that would be in my interest.
So we do laugh.
But the vision loss, it's something that I walk alongside as well as Anne walks alongside. It's a third wheel in our relationship sometimes.
But it's not. It doesn't define either one of us, and it doesn't define our relationship. It is here, and it creates all sorts of interesting moments.
I love that. No, I think that's a great point. Is there anything that you guys want to leave our audience with?
Isn't it interesting? As human beings, we yearn to feel like our experiences and our stories can be shared by somebody else. It goes back to ancient peoples, which is why they drew their stories before language, before words. They drew their important stories on cave walls with the idea that either their future self might see it or another human being would see it so they could feel less alone. Because loneliness is so painful. And yet it tells us, our cores, we are built for relationships and belongingness. We are social creatures, and our stories matter and our experiences matter.
So nice, Anne. And so great that you guys are experiencing this together. You have each other.
Yes.
We do.
Yeah. To experience this together. You guys, thank you so much for just being on and just sharing. And the thing I appreciate also is you're just sharing about your life. I mean, you're very open and honest and vulnerable with, you know, your feelings and emotions and your lives.
Yeah, we found that helps us feel healthier, or I should speak for myself. I just, when I can be real and authentic, those village moments, again, when two people show up real and authentic and kind of trusting that we can share from our core what really matters to us, it's just a beautiful feeling, and it's revitalizing, or it's healthy.
Thank you so much for this conversation today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure, Mark.
Thank you.
Got something to say? Share your thoughts about this episode of Hadley Presents or make suggestions for future episodes. We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email at podcast@hadleyhelps.org. That's podcast@hadleyhelps.org. Or leave us a message at 847-784-2870. Thanks for listening.